This is The Think Tank, talking about the major economic, political, and social issues of the week on The Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Here's Dr. Mike O'Neill and Mike Russell.
Government's listening. We better be quiet. I don't know. We might just have a show in silence. I get nervous because people are recording me. People are listening in. It's Big Brother on steroids. The NSA is taking a lot of heat. We're discovering things about the Patriot Act. We're hearing words like PRISM. My head's all over the joint. I need Dr. Mike O'Neill in here of MikeO'Neill.org. He's got blogs, videos, articles, and he's here with me every single week. How in the world did we get to this NSA nonsense? And Verizon is in there. What brought us here?
I think the first thing to realize is that this is not a new issue. Security versus privacy goes back. It's as old as the Constitution. But even in recent history, it goes back at least till 1978. The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which was passed during the Carter administration. This is Cold War era stuff. And basically, the Congress was convinced with the president's concurrence that this was that the government needed certain levels of authority to engage in various activities. Fast forward a few decades, immediate post 9/11, we passed the Patriot Act, which greatly expanded these authorities. And in particular, Section 215 of the Patriot Act dramatically broadened that power. It gave the government the power to seize anything tangible and remove the limitation that was in exist ahead of time, that you had to be a suspected spy or a terrorist whose records were being sought.
I just play one on TV.
So that's the immediate context. And once again, now we're not fighting communists, we're fighting terrorists. The director of the National Security Agency.
The NSA, that's what the cool kids
NSA,
call it.
Yeah, it's right. National mm-hmm. Security, well, here and after NSA.
Okay.
They are the people who are doing this. They are collecting all kinds of metadata. And let me explain what that is.
Thank you.
Metadata isn't, they're not tapping and listening to all of your phone calls, but what they do is get aggregate records, as best we understand it, of
what's aggregate
meaning, mean counts of all these calls.
Okay.
And so they might look, for example, if you made a few dozen calls to Yemen, that might, or particularly to somebody, or you're somehow in terms of networks, this person's connected to this person, and that pattern looks suspicious, then they might be in a position to go to a FISA court. A FISA court is basically a subset of the court system that's specially set up to deal with these issues and request that the government issue a warrant, which would give them the right to do something more.
Are FISA
example.
Courts public record?
I don't believe they are. Mm-hmm. And our guest can answer that. Mm-hmm. But I think that's part the theory behind this. And I'm not defending. I'm just trying to.
Sure. We need to start out with some
facts. That the idea is that we need these secret courts because they're going to deal with very sensitive information. It's kind of like when Congress goes into special session, a closed session in some of their hearings and says, now we're going to deal with some issues dealing with NASA security, and we're going to shut off the cameras, and we're going to go into closed session, and we're going to do our testimony to a select group of congressmen. But the information that we're going to present can't be made public because it's too sensitive. So FISA court, you go to FISA court before a regular judge in these courts, and they get to decide whether or not you get to issue a warrant for further activity.
Now, and then we fast forward to some twerp in Hawaii, this 29-year-old kid. Yeah. Apparently our national security is so strong that a 29-year-old can walk out the door. High school dropout can walk out of the front door and hightail it to Hong Kong with all the information under his arm. How in the world does that happen?
I can't answer that one. That sounds. I don't know what he has. It certainly seems to me that somebody with that background shouldn't have that kind of an access. And we're going to find more and more about that. But I think more to the point, in terms of the context of this, the NSA director is claiming and has claimed in testimony in front of Congress, and I quote, that we have prevented, quote, dozens of attacks in this country as a result of the information that we've collected.
Yeah. Do you buy that? I'll usually save that for the end of the show. But I mean, I don't have any
basis for knowing. I know that this is what the claim is. And normally, I think the appropriate reaction would be, well, show me.
Right.
You know? And that testimony has been done in private.
Oh, of course. Because they're in saying, a FISA court somewhere,
well,
right?
No.
Oh, okay, good.
In front of Congress.
Okay.
And they're saying that if they do not want to reveal methods and tactics and alert terrorists to what exactly it is that they can do.
All right. So here we are.
So here we are
as a country. I think a lot of us freaked out. Some of us, whatever. I've been posting pictures of everything online for I don't care if anybody knows it. We don't seem a very secretive type of group.
Let me add one thing that's fascinating about the politics of this, because
okay.
It has created some very, very strange bedfellows. We have, on the one hand, the libertarians, the Ron Paul, the Rand Paul crowd. And our guest is the ACLU is on the same side.
Can you believe that? We have some big guns here. I'm not going to lie.
But these are not people who more often than not are going to be on the opposite side of this.
Okay.
Opposite side, the libertarians and the ACLU will be what I'd call the sort of national security conservatives, the John McCains of this world. The interesting thing is the liberals on this one are pretty split. You've got guys like Ron Wyden, who's coming down on the side of the ACLU and is concerned about intrusions on civil liberties. But by no means is it universal. A lot of the traditional liberals, frankly, are aligning with the national security Republicans.
Because a lot of them dug us into this hole with the Patriot Act. Right. A lot of them voted for the Patriot Act. So how do you dig yourself out of that hole? Yes, I voted for it. Yes, I said we wouldn't expand it, but we did. Then our guy jumps into office. We expand it again. Mm-hmm. And now we're caught with our hand in the cookie jar. You have to double down. You have to support it politically.
I think that's a fair statement.
All right. When we come back, we have a very special guest. Alessandra Soler joins us. She is the ACLU of Arizona. She's the executive director. From what I know, that means boss. She's la jefa. All right. She's going to join us and talk about a lawsuit the ACLU is getting involved in against the NSA and your government. We have that when we come back. This is The Think Tank, 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
It is a hot one outside, and I bet it's about to get pretty hot in here. Happy Saturday. Thanks for being with us, folks. Dr. Mike O'Neill's with me, as always. You can go to O'NeillResearch.com. That is his wheelhouse. Chuck full of market research for your perusing entertainment there. Our special guest, Alessandra Soler, she is the executive director of the ACLU of Arizona. Thank you so much for being with us. We're excited to have you here. There's a lot going on. You heard Dr. Mike O'Neill talk about the history, really how we got here to this mess, I would say. Do you agree on each point or do you have something to add to that?
Yeah, no, I think he did a great job in providing that sort of historical context. And it's exactly right. I mean, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which it was created in response to the Nixon Watergate scandal. And it was intended to protect Americans from that kind of abuse that we saw at that time. And so that particular piece of legislation limited to surveillance to, quote, agents of a foreign power. So people that were overseas, non-Americans. What we have seen through the years as the surveillance programs have expanded and through legislation like the Patriot Act, like the amendments, FISA Amendments Act, is that now the government can conduct surveillance on not just foreign nationals, but on Americans as well. So now the only requirement is that one person be a foreign national. So if I'm, you know, communicating with someone outside of the country, the government has the authority under some of these national security laws to conduct surveillance. And I think
Let's define surveillance. Is surveillance getting sort of the meta record of all your calls, or is that listening in on conversation?
You know, that's actually, I love this conversation. This is all kind of new to me. What exactly the sort of metadata is, and I was listening to somebody describing what describing it is, it can be even more revealing as a transcript. I mean, the data reveals who you talk to, for how long,
or at least
how
what
often,
telephone number to
telephone
number, right?
Number, right.
What number contacted what number?
Exactly. But listen. So what if you're calling a suicide hotline, or what if you're a whistleblower? There are lots of whistleblower hotlines out there. You, an employee, you're calling a whistleblower hotline. That's pretty revealing. One of the examples that I've heard, which I thought was pretty interesting, was two big corporations, Sun Microsystems is being sold to Oracle, and you've got all of the phone numbers. You know when they're making phone calls. If it's on a Friday, you know that there's going to be a big announcement on Monday, and it could be pretty revealing. If you're calling the hospital, you're calling your physician, there are calls going back and forth, you know, that could indicate that there's some medical issue. Forget about the issues of infidelity and all that kind of.
Oh yes, but here's my with the metadata. Metadata is top line data. Is essentially it's base level. It's phone numbers, duration of call, and where those calls are coming from geographically and going to. Correct. Why would you even have that if your intention was not to go to two? You can't find out who's bad and who's good unless you go to level two and start listening on phone conversations. I kind of feel that, and I think you'd go along with me on this, that if you have one level, it would be a complete waste of time and money without going to the second level.
Right, and I agree. And I think the bigger issue here is that the government, we've never had a problem with lack of information. I mean, we do a pretty good job of collecting massive amounts of information. This program, although this particular order of Verizon was only a 3-month period, it's been going on for 7 years. And people on both sides of the aisles have said that. The issue is just how broad in scope it is, which is what makes it even more, you know, more egregious. And yes, I mean, the question has been, it's not just a question of the data, but it's being able to analyze that data. And so the effectiveness question, I think, is a really, really important question. And you were talking about that before the break, is like, how do we know that this is actually effective? There have been some incidents, like the Zazi case out of New York, where the government claims that prevented the subway attack. But the public records in that particular case said that they didn't necessarily. And so our position is, if it was effective, why doesn't the surveillance program, why aren't they using it to criminalize and prosecute more criminals? And so they are collecting massive amounts of information. The challenge is, then what do you do with all that information? And the next step is you're going to start prying a little bit more until you find something worth investigating further.
Well, let me probe on the one point. You laid out some fairly scary scenarios of people calling health lines or whistleblower lines or anything like that, which certainly one could use this kind of data to do that. Is there any evidence that the NSA has used any of this information for any purposes like that?
We have evidence that the government has done bad things and they have misused these powers, not necessarily the NSA now. That's what we've been fighting, right? I mean, we've been trying to get as much information as possible.
I'm talking in the realm of this mass of phone data records.
We don't have evidence that they have been misusing it. We have evidence that Napolitano and DHS have targeted, protesters. We have evidence that the government has targeted particular mosques. We have evidence that they, in the 70s, were targeting African-American anti-government activists. And so there's evidence.
But not necessarily using any of this data.
Not the NSA data, because, again, it's a secret court issuing secret orders. Mm-hmm. The entire program is in secret. I mean, mm-hmm. We went to the Supreme Court. I mean, we challenged this program, this NSA surveillance program. We went to the Supreme Court. We did it on behalf of journalists, on behalf of human rights organizations who are frequently in contact with people overseas. And they threw out the case and they said, look, you guys don't have standing because you can't prove that you've been targeted for surveillance. And they're right. We can't prove that, because it's this sort of catch-22, is that the government says, sorry, it's a secret program. We can't confirm whether or not you guys have been targeted. So now,
right.
We, the ACLU, coincidentally, is a client of Verizon.
That's convenient.
We were pretty excited to find out that finally, after 10 years of
Our
trying
big
to figure
break.
out,
yay,
to show standing. And a lot of these you know, we've been litigating a lot of these cases.
Can you explain? Not everybody knows what standing is.
Sure.
Would you explain that?
Sure. So the in order to bring a case, you have to show in court that you're directly impacted by this program. And so in the case of the surveillance program, you have to show that you're being targeted for surveillance.
And so the fact that the ACLU buys phone service from Verizon gives you standing.
Exactly. And we have, we have confidential conversations. We get a lot of calls from government whistleblowers. We only sue the government. And so the calls, the people that contact our office are people that are particularly, they want to make sure that their information is kept confidential. And so that gave us the opportunity to go into court quickly earlier this week to challenge the program.
Now, I want to get into outside of Verizon. Now, we're hearing Google. We're hearing Facebook. The recipe website I go to. I really don't know who's getting into my business.
Pretty suspicious
I tell you, if you've had my wife's cooking. Oh, I kid. I kid because I love. If I want to get into that, and if this lawsuit the ACL is bringing forward, if it's going to cover that, and I want to know the end game, what your ultimate goal is as the ACLU and how it relates to us as everyday citizens. Mike Russell, Dr. Mike O'Neill's here from MikeO'Neill.org and right here in the think tank. Don't go away, folks. This is News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
Welcome back, and thanks for being with us. You can go to MikeO'Neill.org for blogs, videos. Videos? What kind of videos? What kind of videos you got? You want to turn your mic on there. What are you, new? There you go. All right, he's in now.
Okay.
All right.
My mind is going, but my finger was a little lax.
You had your scrambler going just in case NSA was listening to it.
Speeches, television work.
Videos. So I thought you were just making some at home, something fun.
Used to do television commentary.
Dr. Mike O'Neill with a Mai Tai. It's a fireside chat. All right. We have a very special guest with us, Alessandra Soler. She's the executive director of the ACLU of Arizona, and we're very lucky to have you here. What we're talking about is your lawsuit, ACLU lawsuit. I want to know if that goes beyond Verizon into Facebook, Google, the internet companies, the internet giants we've been hearing about that might have been collecting data on us as well.
So the ACLU lawsuit that we filed in federal court is limited to the phone records because that was the information that we had that we knew that we were able to confirm. And so that one is limited to the phone records. But we have a separate motion that we filed with this secret court, this Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. In that court, where we are allowed to file, but we can't appear because it's in secret in a basement. But in that motion, we asked for more information about the scope of the program, whether it included internet sites and email communications, and then what authority the government had to engage in this type of surveillance. And I think that is what is most particularly troubling to me personally, is that, you know, none of this has been made public. And I think Americans have the right to know what the government's policy is. They have a right to know how the government feels that it has the authority to implement this law. And so that was a separate filing in the surveillance court.
So you get to file within the FISA court as well.
We do, but we don't get to appear. And so we can file whatever we file. But
and it goes to an undisclosed location and they hear it.
It could be a bunch of orangutans in there and nobody would know. They could all have stamps and just stamping everything.
No, it's really interesting because when we first started disclosing this court, doing a little bit more outreach on this court after 9/11, this is what would happen. The government would be there arguing and we would not be there. And so it would be the government arguing with the judges.
Do you know who the judges are? No.
We don't know who the judges are, and they're rotating. There are 11 of them, and they're rotating judges.
Are the 11, are those known? Are those names known?
I don't believe so. I do not know the judges, but I would say.
You don't even know the pool from which your judge is being selected.
Right. And they're pretty busy. I mean, they approve thousands and thousands.
But those, if I understand, they are chosen, if I understand it correctly, from the pool of regular U.S. federal district court judges. Is that right?
I believe so. Yes, I believe so. Mm-hmm. And that they serve sort of rotating.
Okay, but you don't know who they are, and you file in writing.
Right.
And you get back a response without a
we're litigating. We filed a separate lawsuit in addition. I mean, we're trying all the legal strategies. We have the motion in the FISA court. We have this NSA case in district court. And then we have a separate longstanding earlier lawsuit that we filed a couple of years ago. It's basically a FOIA litigation lawsuit. So it's a public records lawsuit where we are asking the government, again, for its interpretation, how it's interpreting Section 215 to engage in this type of a surveillance program. Because we, our position is it is they're misusing their authority under this provision of the Patriot Act.
So they've owned to Verizon. I cannot imagine if they were subpoenaing Verizon. I can't imagine that they weren't doing all the other phone companies.
That has been confirmed, that all three, they have been targeting all three companies, AT&T and Sprint.
And frankly, just thinking about it, the amount of data that's available and the usefulness of the data that's available on things like Google would seem to me to be to exceed that of what's available on the phones.
Oh, I mean, exactly.
Because that has content attached to it. Whereas from the kind of metadata we're talking about, we only know what phone numbers contacted what phone numbers at what time and for what duration. We know nothing about the content unless they go get a specific warrant.
Right. And the online privacy issues are, I think, they're even more interesting because our privacy laws have not been updated since the mid-70s. And in the meantime, technology has far outpaced the protections that we have that say government can't be doing surveillance on our electronic communications.
So what does that mean? That's undefined? What the government's right?
There was an important, it's generally undefined. There was an important Supreme Court decision last year called U.S. v. Jones involving GPS tracking devices, where Scalia wrote in sort of an excellent opinion where he said it was limited to a GPS tracking device on a car, and they said that the government needed a warrant in order to conduct this type of surveillance. And so, there's some good language in there that the government said, look, just because you have the technology and the ability to do it doesn't mean you can circumvent the Fourth Amendment. So that's our position in this NSA lawsuit.
And just to take this home, this, quote, GPS device, we almost all have them in our pockets now. If you have a smartphone that has unless you shut off the tracking on that, you can be tracked within a matter of a couple of feet where you are. And now, we could probably tell which studio you're in here.
And now I can see our engineer across the glass here. He's saying that, no, you still, if it's in your pocket and it's on, they know where you're at.
Right.
That's impressive. So is it now an illusion of privacy? Is privacy just an illusion now?
Yeah, I think it's becoming much harder to be anonymous these days. And of course, you know, we have the right to determine who we share our information with, right? I mean, you use the Facebook example. That's the whole controversy. I mean, we can decide when we want to share the information. Sometimes we share information with government for limited purposes, like for schools and hospitals. But in this case, is the NSA case, I mean, that's pretty broad collection of data, and it's and I think that the not just is it broad, but they're it's not relevant if the law says that you can engage in this type of surveillance, the government can engage in this type of surveillance if it's related to a foreign terrorism investigation and if it's a tangible thing. Those two things are not being met here. It's not related to a foreign terrorism investigation.
Certainly not at the first phase when we're talking about in effect, the gross collect, give us everything you've got and who called what, where, and when. From that, we will extract suspicious patterns, and then we may go back to the court and ask for a warrant.
Exactly.
Right. I hear a lot of people saying, I have nothing to hide. Yeah, I have nothing to hide. I hear that over and over and over again, but I'm uncomfortable, very uneasy, being protected by the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. I feel very uneasy having somebody collect data where they can build a case against me to something I might do wrong in the future.
That's what Eric Schmidt said he's the founder of Google, president and CEO of Google, said if you're worried about somebody finding out something that, maybe you shouldn't have been doing it in the first place.
Right. Not quite the case. What's the end goal with this? The Supreme Court, I would assume?
Yeah, I mean, we'd like to go back to the Supreme Court, and we are hoping that this program would be declared unconstitutional, violation of people's First Amendment rights and Fourth Amendment rights, and that's what we're raising in the litigation. And, the courts don't operate quickly, and so these cases take a long time. But I think, it was important for us. We went to court within days after this announcement was made. And look, privacy is an important right. It's a fundamental right in our democracy, and we understand that it's not a right that trumps every other right. And in certain instances, there may be national security reasons why the government has to engage in this type of surveillance. But again, we're talking almost 100 million people. There are 198.9 million Verizon subscribers. Mm-hmm. The government has all your data.
And the people that they called. No matter if it's Sprint, T-Mobile, or some Cricket phone, right?
Yeah, and we're also asking as part of this litigation, we want that information. If you have information, we want it back. You can't keep it. So that's going to be another interesting legal argument.
Real quick, we're up against a break here, but real quick, what happens if you don't win? Where do we go from here?
Well, and again, in the national security context, unfortunately, we haven't been as successful as we'd like to in the courts. And I think, you know, for us, it's educating Congress and building the momentum and educating Americans to have them contact their legislators and say, hey, we need some additional oversight. There have been members of Congress on both sides of the aisle that said that the authors, co-authors and sponsors of the Patriot Act have said this is beyond what we authorized. And so we need to go back to Congress and say, hey, you need to be asking questions. You need more oversight, accountability, and transparency.
This is fascinating. I wonder how many other pieces of legislation have it. What was it? What was the number? 205?
Section 215.
Section 215, sorry. I wonder how many pieces of legislation are out there right now that have a similar Section 215 where they can just expand and expand and expand. You give government an inch, I tell you, they're going to take a mile. When we come back, Dr. Mike O'Neill and I are going to wrap a big bow around this as we do every week. Stay right there, folks. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
Alessandra Soler, the executive director of ACLU of Arizona, she is joining us today. And apparently there's some petitions that is of note to the president of the United States. And I believe in my notes here, he is the boss, right?
Okay. Exactly. Yes, we have asked people to sign online petitions to the president. And so far we have gathered 36,000 petitions. So if your listeners are outraged as we are and upset about this program, they should visit ACLU.org and sign that online petition because they have a right to know. They have a right to know the extent of the surveillance. And the president has said he wants to engage in a debate about this. But then he turns around and wants to shut down the conversation and then prosecute the reporters who make it public.
So. You know, the interesting thing, one of your allies in this ought to be candidate Barack Obama. If you listen to the 2008 campaign speeches, he would sound like he would be an ardent supporter of what you've said here.
And didn't he issue an executive order saying that he wanted to be the most transparent of all of the presidents? That was earlier in I think, the term.
How quickly they all change, right? It's absolute power corrupts absolutely,
well,
is that it?
Some of it's context, I think.
Right.
You remember, 9/11, this country went just a little bit crazy, and you could not oppose anything that had the word national security on it.
I mean, even
look at the language of the bill. We called it the Patriot Act.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't call it the Let's Spy on Whoever Scares the Heck Out of Us Act. We called it the Patriot Act. We equated support for that as being just some minor thing that we had to give up in order to be patriots and be secure.
Sure.
So,
I think since then, it's been the equivalent of, hey, you zip it, right? When you hear, remember 9/11, remember 9/11, that means I can spend what I want. I can strip away as many liberties as I want. Remember 9/11. Well, it's all in the name of remember 9/11.
I think the public is a lot more mixed on this.
Now, this is your wheelhouse. I want to hear all about that.
And it's very interesting. I'll give you the conclusion, then I'll give you some of the facts. The conclusion is that the public's all over the map on this because it juxtaposes two things that people really do care about. They really do care about their liberty, particularly when it's their liberty, and they really do care about security. So, for example, the range here, and it's somewhere in the middle. Support for this kind of activity ranges in recent polls somewhere between 41 and 63%, depending on it. For example, ABC Washington Post said 63% consider the FISA program an acceptable way to investigate terrorism. However, Newsweek said this Newsweek poll said 41% considered this program a necessary tool. Notice the nuances of language. 43% in a Gallup USA Today poll said they approved of the program. A little higher, CNN, ORC, 54% said the NSA phone records program was right. CBS News, 51% approve of the program, 44% disapprove. Fox News, 52% support the program. What's the common thread? I think when you have the word terrorism in there, or we're going to focus on terrorists, support goes up. When we talk about surveilling everybody all the time, support goes down. I think that the jury's out. Believe me, I think if we have a terrorist attack, these numbers are going to go up. To the extent that that doesn't happen, and to the extent that people stress that they're collecting all kinds of records for everybody on a continuous basis, that scares people, and people's reaction is that they think that's overbroad. So I don't think you have a clear bottom line. There is no clear consensus of the public on this issue right now. It's an argument that has to be made. And the reason is that it juxtaposes two things, security and liberty, both of which we hold dear.
I'm gonna add a third into there, and I would say I hate the term misinformation, but it's really what I think of right now. I don't think many of the people polled know what a FISA court is.
I'm sure they don't.
If you ask them what PRISM is, I don't think they would understand. I don't think they know a lot about secret courts. If I go onto the street corner right now with a sign saying there are secret courts, I'm some derelict bum that's lost his mind.
Absolutely. That's technical stuff that's at a level that people don't. And when people talk about phone records, I think some people conjures up a notion of they're tapping my phone, which is not what occurs in phase one. And so that probably suppresses.
But keep in mind, we know there needs to be a phase two to justify a phase one. Right. So I think a lot of people are going to, over the next few weeks, few months, through the ACLU's lawsuit and what we'll learn from that, I think a lot of people will wake up and realize that when we talk about the First Amendment, which we cling to so dearly, and the Fourth Amendment, which I don't think a lot of people knew what the Fourth Amendment was until this started happening. And how dearly we cling to that, especially when we see the blue and red sirens behind us.
Well, we cling to that, but we don't like it when it appears to give rights to criminals. We're ready to give that one up a lot quicker than would be the case if we think about it in terms of this is a right that inheres in every individual.
But I don't think the Constitution is something that we should be able to push a pause button on. I don't think we should pause it for a certain thing. Just for a little while. We're going to pause it. This Constitution, we're going to skip this for a bit. We'll get back to it later. No. I don't think it's that type of document.
Historically, we have done this.
And it's frightening.
I mean, Abraham Lincoln suspended habeas corpus. I mean, we had internment camps in World War. We've got a long history of saying, wait a minute. No, not now. We don't have enough time for that.
Then we come back and we say, oh, I think we screwed up. We apologize.
Now it's okay.
Maybe we shouldn't have interned 40,000 Japanese.
We don't usually apologize until at least a generation
later.
No,
right. So that's a 10-20 years from now, we're going to say, God, maybe we shouldn't have done that.
Then people say, how could we have possibly done that? That was an outrage. But those are always apologies that come in calmer moments where, frankly, we're not feeling threatened.
And I agree with you there, but does it make it right?
No.
That we've done it in the past. You know, I always get after this administration about saying, well, the past administrations have done it. Well, it still doesn't make it right.
It's much easier to see right and wrong from a historical perspective than fear is an incredibly motivating and debilitating emotion. And when that plays into the equation, then all things become possible.
So, Dr. O'Neill, right back to your wheelhouse here, as you have asked people, what is this okay or is this not okay? What do they want? What do they want?
The answer is it depends.
Okay.
I'm not going to be able to tell you. I can tell you absolutely. There is no clear majority that is going to be consistent on this issue or one way or another. That if you pose the question in terms of they're spying on everybody and all of your records, people are going to say, wait a minute, no. I was okay with surveillance on terrorists, not on me and my family.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the government response is no. We're just We're just looking at masses of data in order to figure out the suspicious pattern, and then we will hone in on those that justify it. But so it's how do you word the question? What's the context? I mean, for example, there was a lot of talk post in very recent history, the Boston bombing. How come the security agencies couldn't connect the dots?
Right.
Some within these agencies would argue that it's exactly this kind of program that's necessary to help them do that.
That's
the argument.
Right. And others argue that that's part of the problem. We're collecting so much data and we don't know what to do with it. And so, I mean, that's 9/11 Commission 2001, before we had information mm-hmm. before the terrorist attacks. We just didn't know what to do with it and we hadn't analyzed it properly.
Yep.
And so that's another question, again, about effectiveness.
And it's easy after the fact to find one isolated right. thing and say, that was buried in this 8,000 tons of data, and how you can extract right. the one relevant piece of information is why you have statisticians and computer programmers.
You have a 29-year-old high school dropout somewhere in Honolulu. Yeah, apparently you have him.
You have to hire an army of people like that because you've got so much data.
2014, who runs on this? Who runs against it? Or does everyone stand with a unified front?
I don't think it's going to be unified. I think you have the ACLU and the libertarians on the one side. I think you have the traditional national security Republicans on the other side. I think the liberals are split up on this one all over the map because there are strains of suspicion of government on the one hand, and on the other hand, legitimate security interest. And I tell you, one terrorist act could blow this in one direction. An instance that you, Alessandra, suggested of what the government could do with this data, if there's an instance that shows where they've done that and used that in an inappropriate fashion, right. that can also push the thing in the other direction.
Right. So, it's going to be, and once again, only time will tell.
Yeah, so I don't think there's a clear outcome or a clear public mandate on this one.
Alessandra Soler, Executive Director, ACLU of Arizona, thank you so much for joining us.
Enjoyed it.
Pleasure having you here. Mike Russell, Dr. Mike O'Neill, thanks for spending some time with us, folks. You've been in the Think Tank. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.